He had seldom been in Cairhien to receive any. "I'm the one Elaine will trust with that sort of missive. I can bring them to you, if you convince Amis that I'm strong enough to return to my studies." She wished she had not faltered, but he already knew too much about dreamwalking, if not Telairun Riod. Almost everything about dreamwalking but the name was a close secret among the wise ones, particularly those who could dreamwalk. She had no right to give away their secrets. "Will you tell me where Elaine is?" He might have been asking for a cup of tea. She hesitated, but the agreement between her, Nynaeve, and Elaine, light, how long ago had they made it? That agreement held. He was no longer the boy she had grown up with. He was a man full of himself, and whatever his tone, those steady eyes on her face demanded an answer. If Aes Sedai and Wise Ones struck sparks, Aes Sedai and he would strike a conflagration. There had to be a buffer between the two, and the only buffers available were the three of them. It had to be done, but she hoped they did not get burned up doing it. "I can't tell you that, Rand. I have no right. It isn't mine to tell." And that was the truth, too. For that matter, it was not as if she could tell him where this Salidar was, beyond Altara, somewhere along the River Eldar. He leaned forward intently. "I know she's with Aes Sedai. You told me those Aes Sedai support me, or might. Are they afraid of me? I will take oath to stay away from them if they are. Egwene, I mean to give Elaine the Lion Throne and the Sun Throne. She has claim to both. Cairhien will accept her as quickly as Andor does. I need her, Egwene." Egwene opened her mouth and realized that she was about to tell him all she knew about Salidar. Barely in time, she clamped her teeth shut so hard her jaws ached and opened herself to Sidar. The sweet feel of life, so strong it overwhelmed everything else, seemed to help. Slowly the urge to talk began to ebb. He sat back with a sigh and she stared at him wide-eyed. It was one thing to know he was the strongest Ta'veren since Artur Hawkwing, but quite something else to become caught up in it herself. It was all she could do not to hug herself and shiver. "You won't tell me," he said. "Not a question." Briskly he rubbed his forearms through his shirt sleeves, reminding her that she held Sidar. Close like this, he would be feeling it as a faint tingle. "Do you think I meant to force it out of you?" he snapped, suddenly angry. "Am I such a monster now that you need the power to protect yourself from me?"
"I don't need anything to protect me from you," she said as calmly as she could.
Her stomach was still turning over slowly. He was Rand, and he was a man who could channel. A part of her wanted to gibber and wail. She was ashamed of it, but that did not make it go away. Putting away Sidar, she regretted a tinge of reluctance. Yet it did not matter. If it came to that sort of struggle, unless she managed to shield him, he would handle her as easily as if they arm wrestled.
"Rand, I am sorry I can't help you, but I cannot. Even so, I ask you again to help me. You know it would be helping yourself."
His anger was swallowed by a maddening grin. It was frightening how quickly that could happen with him. "A cat for a hat, or a hat for a cat," he quoted. "But nothing for nothing," she finished mentally. She had heard Taran fairy folk say that when she was a girl. "You put your cat in your hat and stuff it down your britches, Randall Thor," she told him coldly. She managed not to slam the door on her way out, but it was a near thing. Striding away, she wondered what she was going to do. Somehow she had to convince the Wise Ones to let her back into Telairun Riod, legally, so to speak. Sooner or later he was going to encounter the Aes Sedai of Salidar, and it would help so much if she could talk to Elaine or Nynaeve again first. She was a little surprised that Salidar had not approached him already. What was holding Shiriam and the rest back? Nothing she could do about it, and they probably knew better than she. One thing she was eager to tell Elaine. Rand needed her. He sounded as if he meant that more than anything he had ever said in his life. That should set to rest all her worries about whether he still loved her. No man could say he needed you that way unless he loved you.
For a few moments, Rand sat staring at the door after it closed behind Egwene. She had changed so much from the girl he grew up with. In those Aiel clothes, she managed a good imitation of a wise one, except for the height, anyway. A short wise one with big dark eyes. But then Egwene always did everything with her whole heart. She had stayed as cool as any Aes Sedai, seizing Sayadar when she thought he was threatening her. That was what he had to remember. Whatever clothes she wore, she wanted to be Aes Sedai, and she would keep Aes Sedai secrets even after he made it clear that he needed Elaine to ensure peace in two nations. He had to think of her as Aes Sedai. It was saddening. Wearily, he got to his feet and donned his coat again. There were still the Carrionan nobles to see, Kolaver and Maringil, Dobrain and the rest. And the Tyrans, Mylon and Aracom, and that lot would twitch if he gave the Carrionan a moment more than they got. And the Wise Ones would want their turn at him, and Timolin and the rest of the clan chiefs here he had not met with yet today. Why had he ever wanted to leave Camelin? Well, talking with Herod had been pleasant. The questions he brought up were not, but it was nice to talk to someone who never remembered he was the dragon reborn. And he had found a little time without a coterie of Aiel surrounding him. He was going to find more of that. He caught sight of himself in a gilt-framed mirror. "At least you didn't let her see you were tired," he told his reflection. That had been one of Moraine's more succinct bits of advice. Never let them see you weaken. He just had to become used to thinking of Egwene as one of them.
Apparently squatting at her ease in the garden below Randall Thor's rooms, Suelin tossed a small knife into the dirt, seemingly amusing herself with a game of flip. A rock owl's cry from one of the windows brought her to her feet with an oath, slipping the knife behind her belt. Randall Thor had left his rooms again. Keeping watch over him this way was not going to work. If she had Enyla or Somara here, she would set them on him. Normally she tried to protect him from that sort of nonsense as she would a first brother. Trotting to the nearest doorway, she joined three more maidens, none had come with her, and began to search the warren of corridors while trying to appear just to be walking. Whatever the Karakarn wanted, nothing must happen to the only son of a maiden ever to come back to them.
Chapter 19. Matters of Toe. Rand thought that he would sleep well that night. He was nearly tired enough to forget Alana's touch, and more important, Avienda was out in the tents with the Wise Ones, not undressing for bed with no regard for his presence, not disturbing his rest with the sound of her breathing. Something else made him toss, though. Dreams. He always warded his dreams, to keep the Forsaken out, and the Wise Ones, but warding could not keep out what was already inside. Dreams came of huge white things like giant bird wings, without the bird, sailing across the sky. Of great cities of impossibly tall buildings, shining in the sun, with shapes like beetles and flattened water drops speeding along the streets. He had seen all that before, in the huge Turangrial, in Ruidion, where he had gained the dragons on his arms, and knew them for images of the Age of Legends. But this time it was all different. Everything seemed twisted, the colors wrong, as though something had gone askew in his eyes. The show wings faltered and fell, each carrying hundreds to death. Buildings shattered like glass, cities burned, the land heaved like storm-tossed seas. And time after time he faced a beautiful golden-haired woman, watched love turn to terror on her face. Part of him knew her, part of him wanted to save her from the Dark One, from any harm, from what he himself was about to do. So many parts of him, mind splintered and glittering shards, all screaming. He woke in darkness, sweating, shaking. Luz Theron's dreams. That had never happened before, not dreaming the man's dreams. He lay there the hours remaining until sunrise, staring at nothing, afraid to close his eyes. He held on to Saeedean, as if he could use it to fight the dead man, but Luz Theron remained silent. When pale light finally appeared at the windows, a guy Shine slipped silently into the room with a cloth-covered silver tray. Seeing Rand awake, he did not speak, only bowed and left just as quietly. With the power in him, Rand smelled cool sweetberry tea and warm bread, butter and honey, the hot porridge Aiel ate mornings, all as if his nose were in the tray. Releasing the source, he dressed and buckled on his sword. He did not touch the cloth covering the food. He did not much feel like eating. Holding the dragon scepter in the crook of his elbow, he left his apartments. The maidens were back in the wide corridor with Sulin and Urien and his red shields, but not alone. People crowded the hallway shoulder to shoulder beyond the guards, and some inside the ring. Avienda stood among a delegation of wise ones, Amis and Bear and Malaine, Soralia, of course, Chaelin, a smoke-water Miagoma with touches of gray in her dark red hair, and Adara, a Nedershianda, who looked not much older than himself, though she already had an apparently unshakable calm in her blue eyes, and a straight-backed presence to match the others. Berylaine was with them, too, but not Ruark or any of the other clan chiefs. What he had had to say to them had been said, and Aiel did not draw things out. But then why were the wise ones there? Or Berylaine? The green and white dress she wore this morning showed a pleasant expanse of pale bosom. Then there were the Kyrienin, outside the ring of Aiel. Colaver, strikingly handsome in her middle years, dark hair, an elaborate tower of curls, and horizontal slashes coloring her gown from high, gold-embroidered collar to below her knees, more slashes than anyone else present. Solid, square-faced Dobrain, the front of his mostly gray hair shaved soldier fashion, and his coat worn from the straps of a breastplate. Marengil, straight as a blade, white hair touching his shoulders. He had not shaved his forehead, and his dark silk coat, striped like Dobrain's, nearly to his knees, was fit for a ball. 24 or more clustered behind, mostly younger men and women, few wearing horizontal stripes even as low as the waist. "Grace favor the Lord Dragon," they murmured, bowing hand to heart or curtsying, and "Grace honors us with the Lord Dragon's presence." The Tyrans had their contingent as well, high lords and ladies, without lesser nobles, in peaked velvet hats and silk coats with puffy satin-striped sleeves, in bright gowns with broad lace ruffs and close-fitting caps of pearls or gems, making their respects with, "The light illumine the Lord Dragon." Mylan stood foremost, of course, lean and hard and expressionless, with his gray-pointed beard. Close beside him, Theander's stern expression and iron eyes somehow did not diminish her beauty, while willowy Anaella's simpers lessened hers. There were certainly no smiles of any sort on the faces of Marakan, a blue-eyed rarity among Tyrans, or bald Guayam, or Aracom, who looked twice as slender alongside Guayam's solid width, if just as steely. They, and Mylan, had been thick with Hearn and Simon. Rand had not mentioned those two yesterday, or their treason, but he was sure it was known here, and equally sure his silence was given meaning according to each man's own mind. They had grown used to such since coming to Carrion, and this morning they watched Rand as if he might suddenly produce orders for their arrest. In truth, nearly everyone was watching someone. A good many eyed the Aiel nervously, often hiding anger with varying success. Others watched Berylaine almost as closely. He was surprised to see that even the men, even the Tyrans, had more thought than lechery on their faces. Most watched him, of course. He was who he was and what he was. Colaver's cool gaze shifted between him and Avienda, where it heated. There was bad blood there, though Avienda seemed to have forgotten. Colaver would certainly never forget the beating she had received from Avienda after being discovered in Rand's rooms, or forgive the fact that it was common knowledge now. Mylon and Maringill each made his awareness of the other plane by avoiding the other's eyes. Both wanted the throne of Kyrian, and both thought the other his chief rival. Dobraine watched Mylon and Maringill, though why was anyone's guess. Mylaine studied Rand, while Soralea studied her, and Avienda frowned at the floor. One big-eyed young woman among the Kyrianen wore her hair loose and cut off at the shoulder instead of piled in ornate curls, and a sword belted over a dark riding dress with only 6 slashes of color. Many of the others did not bother to hide disparaging smiles when they glanced at her. She hardly seemed to notice, alternating between staring at the maidens with stark admiration or at Rand with stark fear. He remembered her. Salanda, one of the stream of beautiful women Kolaver had thought would tie the Dragon Reborn to her schemes, until Rand convinced her it would not work. With Avienda's unasked help, unfortunately. He hoped Kolaver feared him enough to forget revenge on Avienda, but he wished he could make Salanda believe she had nothing to fear.
"You cannot please everyone," Moraine had said. "You cannot soothe everyone."
A hard woman. To cap it all, the Aiel watched everyone except the Wise Ones, of course, and except Berylaine, for some reason. They always eyed Wetlanders suspiciously, yet she might as well have been another Wise One. "You all honor me." Rand hoped he did not sound too dry. Back to a parade. He wondered where Egwene was. Probably lolling in bed. Briefly he considered finding her and making one last effort to... No, if she would not tell him, he did not know how to make her. Too bad being Taviren did not work when he most wanted it to. "Unfortunately, I will not be able to talk with you more this morning. I am returning to Camelin." Andor was the problem he had to deal with now. Andor and Samael.
"Your orders are to be carried out, my Lord Dragon," Berylaine said. "This morning, so you may witness it."
"My orders?"
"Mangan," she said. "He was told this morning."
Most of the Wise Ones had donned a flat expression, but Bear and Soralea both wore open disapproval. Surprisingly, it was directed at Berylaine. "I don't mean to be a witness to every murderer who's hung," Rand said coldly. In truth, he had forgotten, or rather shoved it out of his mind. Hanging a man you liked was not something anyone would want to remember. Ruark and the other chiefs had not even mentioned it when he spoke with them. Another truth was that he would not make this execution special. Aiel had to live by the law like anyone else. Kyrianen and Tyrans had to see that, and know that if he would not play favorites with the Aiel, he certainly would not with them.
"You use everything and everybody," he thought, sickened.
At least he hoped he had thought it. Besides, he did not want to watch any hanging, much less Mangan's. Mylon certainly looked thoughtful, and sweat was beading on Aracom's forehead, though that might have been the heat. Kolaver, face going pale, seemed to be seeing him for the first time ever. Berylaine divided a rueful glance between Bear and Soralea, who nodded. Could they have told her he would answer as he had? It did not seem possible. The others' reactions varied from surprise to satisfaction. But he noted Salanda in particular. Wide-eyed, she forgot the maidens. If she had looked at Rand fearfully before, now she was terrified. Well, so be it. "I will be leaving for Camelin immediately," Rand told them. A soft sound rippled among the Kyrianen and Tyrans, very much like sighs of relief. It was no surprise that they all accompanied him as far as the chamber set aside for his traveling. Except for Berylaine, the maidens in red shields kept the Wetlanders back. They did not particularly like letting Kyrianen near him, and he was as glad they barred the Tyrans today. There were plenty of glares, but no one said anything. Not to him. Not even Berylaine, who followed right behind with the Wise Ones and Avienda, talking quietly, occasionally laughing softly.
That made the hair on his neck stand. Berylaine and Avienda talking together. And laughing.
At the square-carved door to the traveling chamber, he looked carefully above Berylaine's head as she swept him a deep curtsy.
"I will tend Kyrian without fear or favor until you return, my Lord Dragon."
Perhaps, despite Mangan, she really had come this morning just to say that and be heard by the other nobles. It brought an indulgent smile from Soralea for some reason. He needed to find out what was going on there. He was not going to have the Wise Ones interfering with Berylaine. The rest of the Wise Ones had drawn Avienda aside. They seemed to be taking turns speaking to her, quite firmly, though he could not make out words.
"When you see Perrine Barra next," Berylaine added, "please give him my warmest wishes. And Matt Cawthon also." "We await the Lord Dragon's return eagerly,"
Colivert lied, keeping her face carefully neutral. Mylon glared at her for having managed to speak first, and made a flowery speech, saying no more really than she had, which Maringill, of course, had to top, for floweriness at least. Fianda and Anaella outdid both, adding enough compliments that he eyed Avienda anxiously, but the Wise Ones still had her occupied. Dobrain contented himself with, "until my Lord Dragon's return," while Marakan, Guayam, and Aracom murmured something indistinct with wary eyes. It was a relief to duck inside, away from them. The surprise came when Malayne followed him ahead of Avienda. He raised a questioning eyebrow.
"I must consult with Bale on business of the Wise Ones," she told him in a no-nonsense voice, then immediately shot a sharp look at Avienda, who had on such an innocent face that Rand knew she was hiding something.
Avienda looked many things naturally, but never innocent. Never that innocent.
"As you wish," he said.
He suspected the Wise Ones had been waiting a chance to send her to Camelin. Who better to make sure Rand did not influence Bale the wrong way than Bale's wife? Like Ruark, the man had two, which Matt always said was either a dream or a nightmare, and he could not decide which. Avienda watched closely as he opened a gateway back to Camelin into the Grand Hall. She usually did, though she could not see his flows. Once she had made a gateway herself, but in a rare moment of panic, and she had never been able to remember how. Today, for some reason, the rotating slash of light apparently reminded her of what happened that time. Red suffused her tan cheeks, and she suddenly refused to look in his direction. With the power filling him, he smelled her, the herbal scent of her soap, a hint of sweet perfume he could not remember her wearing before. For once, truly eager to be rid of Saidine, he was the first one through into the empty throne room. Alana seemed to crash home in his head, her presence as palpable as if she had been right in front of him. She had been weeping, he thought. Because he had gone away? Well, let her weep for that. Somehow he had to break free of her. His going first did not sit well with the maidens or red shields, of course. Urien merely grunted and shook his head disapprovingly. A white-faced Tsulin went up on her toes to put herself nose to nose with Rand.
"The great and powerful Kar Karn gave his honor to Farderize Mai to carry," she all but hissed in a low whisper. "If the mighty Karakhan dies in ambush while the maidens protect him, Farderize Mai has no honor left. If the all-conquering Kar Karn does not care, perhaps Anila is right. Perhaps the omnipotent Kar Karn is a willful boy who should be held by the hand lest he run over a cliff because he will not look."
Rand's jaw tightened. In private, he gritted his teeth and put up with this, with less pointed than this usually, for the debt he owed the maidens. But not even Anila or Samara had ever openly berated him in public. Malayne was already halfway down the hall, skirts gathered up and almost trotting. Apparently she could not wait to re-establish the Wise One's influence with Bale. He could not tell whether Urien had heard, though the man seemed awfully intent on directing his veiled Aethon Dor as they searched through the columns with the maidens, something they had no need of direction to do. Avienda, on the other hand, arms folded beneath her breasts, wore such a mix of frown and approval that he had no doubts about her. "Yesterday went very well," he told Sulin firmly. "From now on, I think two guards will be more than sufficient." Her eyes almost bulged. She could not seem to find breath to speak. Now that he had taken away, it was time to give back, before she exploded like an illuminator's fireworks. "It's different when I go outside the palace, of course. The guard you have been giving me will do then, but here, or in the Sun Palace, or the Stone of Tyr, two are enough." He turned away, while her mouth still worked silently. Avienda fell in beside him as he walked around the dais holding the thrones to the small doors behind. He had come here instead of straight to his own rooms in hope that he could lose her. Even without Sidene, he could smell her, or maybe it was the memory. Either way, he wished his head were clogged with a cold. He liked the smell too much. Shawl wrapped around her tightly, Avienda stared straight ahead of her as if troubled, not noticing when he held the door into one of the lion-paneled dressing rooms for her, something that usually aroused at least a little ire, perhaps a tart question as to which of her arms was broken. When he asked what was the matter, she gave a start.
"Nothing."
"Sulin was right. But..." Suddenly she gave a reluctant grin.
"Did you see her face? No one has set her down like that since... since never, I think. Not even Ruark."
"I'm a little surprised to find you on my side." She stared at him with those big eyes. He could spend all day just trying to decide whether they were blue or green. No, he had no right to think about her eyes. What had happened after she made that doorway, to run from him, made no difference. He especially had no right to think about that.
"You trouble me so, Randolthor," she said without a bit of heat. "Light, sometimes I think the Creator made you just to trouble me."
He wanted to tell her it was her own fault. More than once he had offered to send her back to the Wise Ones, though it would just mean them putting someone else in her place. But before he could open his mouth, Jelani and Laia caught up, followed almost immediately by two red shields. One a graying fellow with three times the scars Laia had on her face. Rand directed Jelani and the scarred man back to the throne room, which nearly precipitated an argument. Not from the Red Shield, who merely glanced at his fellow, shrugged and went, but Jelani drew herself up. Rand pointed to the door leading to the Grand Hall. "The Kar-Karn expects Farderize Mai to go where he commands.
You may be a king to the Wetlanders, Randolthor, but not to Aiel."
A tough sullenness marred Jelani's dignity, reminding him how young she was.
"The maidens will never fail you in the Dance of Spears, but this is not the dance."
Still she went, after a rapid exchange of hand-talk with Laia. With Laia and the lean red shield, a yellow-haired man named Kassin, who stood a good inch taller than Rand, Rand strode quickly through the palace to his rooms. And with Avienda, of course. If he thought those bulky skirts might make her fall behind, he was mistaken. Laia and Kassin remained in the hallway outside his sitting room, a large chamber with a marble frieze of lions below the high ceiling and tapestries of hunting scenes in misty mountains. But Avienda followed him inside.
"Shouldn't you be with Mulane?" he demanded. "Business of the Wise Ones and all that?"
"No," she said curtly. "Mulane would not be pleased if I interfered right now."
Light, but he should not be pleased that she was not going.
Tossing the dragon scepter atop a table with gilded vine-carved legs, he undid his sword belt and added that. "Did Amis and the others tell you where Elaine is?" For a long moment, Avienda stood in the middle of the blue-tiled floor looking at him, her expression unreadable.
"They do not know," she said finally. "I asked."
He had expected she would. She had not done it in months, but before coming to Camelin the first time with him, every second word out of her mouth had been a reminder that he belonged to Elaine. In her view, he did, and what had happened between them beyond that gateway she had made
clearly did not alter the fact, and would not happen again, something else she had made quite clear. Exactly as he wanted it. He was worse than a pig to feel regret. Ignoring all the fine gilded chairs, she settled cross-legged on the floor, arranging her skirts gracefully.
"They did speak of you, though."
"Why does that not surprise me?" he said dryly. And to his surprise, her cheeks reddened. Avienda was not a woman for blushes, and this made twice in one day.
"They have shared dreams, some of which concern you."
She sounded slightly strangled until she paused to clear her throat, then fixed him with a steady, determined gaze.
"Mullane and Baird dreamed of you on a boat," she said,
the word still awkward after all these months in the wetlands,
"with three women whose faces they could not see, and a scale tilting first one way, then the other. Mullane and Amis dreamed of a man standing by your side with a dagger to your throat, but you did not see him. Bear and Amis dreamed of you cutting the wetlands in two with a sword."
For an instant her eyes darted contemptuously to the scabbarded blade lying atop the dragon scepter. Contemptuously, and a bit guiltily. She had given him that, once the property of laymen. Carefully wrapped in a blanket so she could not be said to have actually touched it.
"They cannot interpret the dreams, but they thought you should know."
The first was opaque to him as to the wise ones, but the second seemed obvious. A man he could not see with a dagger had to be a gray man. Their souls given up to the shadow, not merely pledged but given away, they could slip past notice even when you looked right at them. And their only real purpose was assassination. Why had the wise ones not understood something so plain? As for the last, he feared that was plain as well. He already was cutting lands apart. Taraban and Arad-Daman were ruins. The rebellions in Tyr and Cairhien could become more than skulking talk at any time. And Ilion would certainly feel the weight of his sword. And that was aside from the Prophet and the dragon sworn down in Altara and Murindi. "I don't see any mystery in two of those, Avienda." But when he explained, she gave him a doubtful look. Of course. If Wise One dreamwalkers could not interpret a dream, certainly no one else could. He grunted sourly and flung himself into a chair facing her. "What else did they dream?"
"There is one other I can tell you, though it may not concern you."
Which meant there were some she would not tell, which made him wonder why the wise ones had discussed them with her, since she was not a dreamwalker.
"All three had this dream, which makes it especially significant. Rain,"
that word still came clumsily too,
"coming from a bowl. There are snares and pitfalls around the bowl. If the right hand picks it up, they will find a treasure, perhaps as great as the bowl. If the wrong hands, the world is doomed. The key to finding the bowl is to find the one who is no longer."
"No longer what?" This certainly sounded more important than the rest. "Do you mean somebody who's dead?" Avienda's dark reddish hair swung below her shoulders as she shook her head.
"They know no more than I said."
To his surprise, she rose smoothly with those automatic adjustments to her clothes that women always made. "Do you..." He coughed deliberately.
"Do you have to go?"
he had been about to say. Lighty wanted her to go. Every minute around her was torture. But then every minute away from her was torture, too. Well, he could do what was right and what was good for him, and best for her. "Do you want to go back to the Wise Ones, Avienda? To resume your studies? There really isn't any point to your staying longer. You've taught me so much I might as well have been raised, Aiel." Her sniff said volumes, but of course she did not leave it at that.
"You know less than a boy of six.
Why does a man listen to his second mother before his own mother, and a woman to her second father before her own? When can a woman marry a man without making a bridal wreath? When must a roof mistress obey a blacksmith? If you take a silversmith, Guy Shine, why must you let her work one day for herself, for each she works for you? Why is the same not true of a weaver?
He floundered for answers, short of admitting he did not know, but she suddenly fiddled with her shawl as if she had forgotten him.
Sometimes Giotto makes for very great jokes. I would laugh my sides apart if I were not the butt of this one.
Her voice dropped to a whisper.
I will meet my toe.
He thought she was talking to herself, but he answered, carefully.
If you mean about Lanfear, it wasn't me who saved you. Moraine did. She died saving all of us.
Layman's sword had rid her of her only other toe to him, though he had never been able to understand what that was. The only obligation she knew. He prayed she never learned of the other. She would see it as one, though certainly he did not. Avienda peered at him, head tilted and a slight smile flickering on her lips. She had regained a self-possession that would have done Soralia proud.
Thank you, Randolthor. Bear says it is well to be reminded now and then that a man does not know everything. Be sure to let me know when you mean to go to sleep. I would not come late and wake you.
Rand sat there staring at the door after she had gone. A Kyrianan playing the game of houses was usually easier to understand than any woman making no effort to be enigmatic at all. He suspected that what he felt for Avienda, whatever that was, tangled things up worse.
"What I love, I destroy," Luz Theron laughed. "What I destroy, I love."
"Shut up!"
Rand thought furiously, and the thin-edged laughter vanished. He did not know who he loved, but he knew who he was going to save. From whatever he could. But from him, most of all.
In the hallway, Avienda sagged against the door, taking deep, calming breaths. Meant to be calming, anyway. Her heart still tried to tear through her ribcage. Being near Randolthor stretched her naked over hot coals, stretched her till she thought her bones would pop apart. He brought such shame to her as she had never thought she would know. A great joke, she had told him, and part of her did want to laugh. She had toe toward him, but much more toward Elaine. All he had done was save her life. Lanfear would have killed her without him. Lanfear had wanted to kill her in particular, as painfully as possible. Somehow Lanfear had known. Beside what she had incurred toward Elaine, her toe toward Rand was a termite mound beside the spine of the world. Cassin, the cut of his coat, told her he was Goshian as well as Ethandor. She did not recognize his sept, merely glanced at her from where he squatted with his spears across his knees. He knew nothing, of course. But Leah smiled at her, entirely too encouraging for a woman she did not know, entirely too knowingly for anyone. Avienda was shocked to find herself thinking that Charin, as Leah's coat marked her, were often sneaking cats. She had never thought of any maiden as anything but Far Dari Smai. Randolthor had unstrung her brain. Still her fingers flashed angrily. "Why do you smile, girl? Have you no better use for your time?" Leah's eyebrows raised slightly, and if anything her smile became amused. Her fingers moved in answer. "Who do you call girl, girl? You are not yet wise, but no longer maiden. I think you will put your soul in a wreath to lay at a man's feet." Avienda took a furious step forward. There were few insults worse among Far Dari Smai, then stopped. In cut-in swords she did not think Leah could match her, but in skirts she would be defeated. Worse, Leah would probably refuse to make her guy shine. She could, attacked by a woman who was not a maiden and not yet a wise one, or demand the right to beat Avienda before any of the Tardad who could be gathered. A lesser shame than the refusal, but not small. Worst of all, whether she won or lost, Milane surely would choose a method to remind her she had left the spear behind, that would make her wish Leah had drubbed her 10 times before all the clans. In a wise one's hands, shame was keener than a flaying knife. Leah never moved a muscle. She knew all that as well as Avienda did. "Now you stare at one another," Cassin said idly. "One day I must learn this hand talk of yours." Leah glanced at him, her laugh silvery. "You will look pretty in skirts, red shield, the day you come to ask to become a maiden." Avienda drew a relieved breath when Leah's eyes left hers. Under the circumstances, she could not have looked away first, honorably. Automatically, her fingers moved in acknowledgement, the first hand talk a maiden learned, since the phrase a new maiden used most often. "I have toe." Leah signed back without pause. "Very small, spear sister." Avienda smiled gratefully for the missing hooked little finger that would have made the term mocking, used to women who gave up the spear and then tried to behave as if they had not. A Wetlander servant was running up the hall. Keeping her face clear of the disgust she felt for someone who spent his life serving others, Avienda strode off the other way so she would not have to pass the fellow. Killing Randall Thor would meet one toe, killing herself the second, but each toe blocked that solution to the other. Whatever the wise one said, she had to find some way to meet both.
Chapter 20. From the Steading. Rand had just begun thumbing tobacco into his short pipe when Lya put her head in at the door. Before she could speak, a panting, round-faced man, in red and white livery, pushed past her and fell to his knees before Rand, while she stared in amazement.
"My Lord Dragon!"
the fellow burst out in a breathless squeak.
"Ogier have come to the palace! 3 of them! They have been given wine and offered more, but they insist only on seeing the Lord Dragon!"
Rand made his voice easy. He did not want to frighten the man. "How long have you been in the palace?" The fellow's livery coat fit him, and he was not young. "I'm afraid I don't know your name." The kneeling man goggled.
"My name? Barry, my Lord Dragon. 22 years, my Lord Dragon, come winter night. My Lord Dragon, the Ogier?"
Rand had visited an Ogier steading twice, but he was not sure of the proper etiquette. Ogier had built most of the great cities, the oldest parts of them, and still came out of their steading occasionally to make repairs, yet he doubted Barry would have been this excited for anyone else, less than King or Aes Sedai. Maybe not for them. Rand stuffed pipe and tobacco pouch back into his pocket. "Take me to them." Barry leapt to his feet, all but bouncing on his toes. Rand suspected he had made the right choice. The man showed no surprise that the Lord Dragon was going to the Ogier instead of having them brought to him. He left his sword and the scepter behind. Ogier would not be impressed by either. Lya and Cassin came, of course, and it was plain Barry would have run back as well, if not for the necessity of keeping his pace to Rand's. The Ogier waited in a courtyard with a fountain, its basin filled with lily pads and red and gold fish. A white-haired man, in a long coat that flared above high boots with their tops turned down, and 2 women, one noticeably much younger than the other, their skirts embroidered in vines and leaves, the elders considerably more elaborate than the youngers. Golden goblets made for humans seemed tiny in their hands. Several trees retained some of their leaves, and the palace itself gave shade. The Ogier were not alone. When Rand appeared, Sulin and a good 3 dozen maidens were crowded around them, and Urien plus 50 or more Aielmen. The Aiel had the grace to fall silent when they saw Rand. The Ogier man said,
"Your name sings in my ears, Randall Thor,"
in a voice like rumbling thunder, and gravely made introductions. He was Hammon, son of Dal, son of Moril. The older woman was Kovril, daughter of Ella, daughter of Sung, and the younger was Aerith, daughter of Iva, daughter of Aelar. Rand remembered seeing Aerith once in Steading Tsofu, a hard 2-day ride from the city of Kyrian. He
He could not imagine what she was doing in Camelon. The Ogier made the Aiel seem small. They made the courtyard seem small. Hammond stood over half again as tall as Rand, and broad in proportion. Kovril, less than a head, an Ogier head, shorter than that. And even Aerith topped Rand by nearly a foot and a half. Yet that was the smallest difference between Ogier and humans. Hammond's eyes were as large and round as teacups, his broad nose nearly covered his face, and his ears stood up through his hair, tipped with white tufts. He wore long, drooping white mustaches and a narrow beard beneath his chin, and his eyebrows hung down to his cheeks. Rand could not have said precisely how Kovril's and Aerith's faces differed, except for lacking beards and mustaches, of course, and their eyebrows were not quite so long or thick, but they seemed somehow more delicate. Though Kovril's was quite stern at the moment, she looked familiar too for some reason, and Aerith appeared worried, her ears sagging. "If you will forgive me a moment," Rand told them. Sulin did not let him get another word out.
"We came to talk with the Tree Brothers, Randall Thor," she said firmly. "You must know the Aiel have long been water friends to the Tree Brothers. We go to trade in their steading often."
"That is quite true," Hammond murmured.
For an Ogier, it was a murmur. An avalanche somewhere out of sight. "I am sure the others did come to talk," Rand told Sulin. He could pick out the members of her guard this morning by eye, every last one of them. Jelani blushed a deep red. On the other hand, aside from Urien, no more than three or four of the morning's red shields were there. "I would not like to think I need to ask Anila and Samara to take you in charge." Sulin's tanned face darkened with indignation, making the scar she had taken following him stand out more. "I would talk with them alone." "Alone," he emphasized, eyeing Lya and Cassin. "Unless you think I need protection from them." If anything, that made her more offended, and she gathered up the maidens with quick flashes of hand talk in what for anyone but an Aiel would surely have been called a huff. Some of the Aiel men were chuckling as they left. Rand supposed he had made a joke of some kind. As they went, Hammond stroked his long beard.
"Humans have not always thought us so safe, you know.
His musing sounded like a huge bumblebee.
"It is in the old records, very old. Only fragments, really, but dating from just after..." "Elder Harmon," Kovril said politely, "if we may stick to the matter at hand..."
This bumblebee rumbled at a higher pitch.
Elder Hammond. Where had Rand heard that before? Each steading had its council of elders.
Hammond sighed deeply.
"Very well, Kovril. But you are showing unseemly haste. You barely gave us time to wash before coming here. I vow you've begun to leap about like..."
Those big eyes flickered toward Rand, and he covered a cough with a hand the size of a large ham. Ogier considered humans hasty, always trying to do now what could not possibly matter until tomorrow. Or until next year. Ogier took a very long view. They also thought it insulting to remind humans of how they leaped about.
"This has been a most exacting journey outside,"
Hammond went on, explaining to Rand.
"Not the least of it discovering that the Shaidu Aiel had besieged Al-Kair Ainalan. Most extraordinary, that. And that you were actually there. But then you left before we could speak with you. And I cannot help feeling we have been impetuous. No. No, you speak, Kovril. It is for you I left my studies and my teaching to go running across the world. My classes will be in riot by now."
Rand almost grinned. The way Ogier normally did things, Hammond's classes would take half a year to decide he really was gone, and a year more to discuss what to do about it.
"A mother has some right to be anxious,"
Kovril said, tufted ears quivering.
She seemed to be battling between the respect due an elder and a most un-Ogier-like impatience. When she turned to Rand, she drew herself up, ears standing straight and chin firm.
"What have you done with my son?"
Rand gaped. "Your son?"
"Loyal."
She stared as if he were mad. Aerith was peering at him anxiously, hands clutched to her breast.
"You told the eldest of the elders of Steading Tsofu that you would look after him,"
Kovril marched on.
"They told me you did. You did not call yourself Dragon then, but it was you. Wasn't it, Aerith? Did Aela not say Rand Althor?"
She did not give the younger woman time for more than a nod. As her voice picked up speed, Hammond began to look pained.
"My loyal is too young to be outside, too young to be running across the world, doing the things you no doubt have him doing. Elder Aela told me about you. What has my loyal to do with the ways and Trollocs and the Horn of Valyr? You will hand him over to me now, please, so I can see him properly married to Aerith. She will settle his itchy feet."
"He's very handsome,"
Aerith murmured shyly, her ears quivering so hard with embarrassment that the dark tufts blurred.
"And I think he's very brave, too."
It took Rand a moment to regain his balance mentally. An ogier being firm sounded much the same as a mountain falling, an ogier being firm and speaking rapidly. By ogier lights, Loyal was too young to have left the steading alone, little more than 90. Ogier were very long-lived. From the first day Rand had met him, all full of eagerness to see the world, Loyal had been worried over what would happen when the elders realized he had run away. Most of all, he worried about his mother coming after him with a bride in tow. He said the man had no say in these things among Ogier, and the woman not much. It was all the two mothers doing. It was not beyond possibility to find yourself betrothed to a woman you had never met before the day your mother introduced you to your prospective bride and mother-in-law. Loyal seemed to think marriage would be the end of everything for him, certainly to all his wishes to see the world, and whether it would or not, Rand could not hand a friend over to what he feared. He was about to say he did not know where Loyal was and suggest they return to the steading until he came back. He had his mouth open to say it when a question occurred to him. It embarrassed him that he could not remember something so important. To Loyal it was. "How long has he been out of the steading?"
"Too long,"
Hammond grumbled like boulders rolling downhill.
"The boy never wanted to apply himself, always talking about seeing outside, as if anything has really changed from what's in the books he should have been studying. What real change is it, if humans change the lines on a map? The land is still. He has been outside much too long,"
Loyal's mother put in as firmly as a post driven into dry clay. Hammond frowned at her, and she managed to stare back at him just as firmly, although her ears vibrated in embarrassment.
"More than 5 years now,"
Aerith said. For a moment, her ears wilted, then shot up and stubbornly back. In a very good imitation of Kovril, she said,
"I want him to be my husband. I knew that when I first saw him. I will not let him die. Not from being foolish."
Rand and Loyal had talked of many things, and one of them had been the longing, although Loyal had not liked talking about it. When the breaking of the world drove humans to flee for whatever safety they could find, it drove Ogier from the steading, too. For long years, humans had wandered in a world that changed sometimes by the day, hunting that safety. And Ogier had wandered, hunting for the steading lost in the changing land. It was then that the longing entered them. An ogier away from the steading wanted to return. An ogier long from the steading needed to return. An ogier too long from the steading died. "He told me of an ogier who stayed out longer," Rand said quietly. 10 years, I think he said. Hammond was shaking his massive head before Rand finished.
It will not do. That I know of, five have remained outside that long and survived to return, and I think I would know if more had. Such madness would be written about and talked about. Three of those died within a year of coming home. The fourth was an invalid for the rest of his life, and the fifth little better, needing a stick to walk. Though she did continue writing, Dalar had some interesting things to say concerning...
This time when Kovril opened her mouth, his head whipped around, he stared at her, long eyebrows humping up, and she began smoothing her skirts furiously. But she stared right back.
5 years is a short time, I know,
Hammond told Rand, while watching Kovril sharply from the corner of his eye.
But we are tied to the Steading now. We heard nothing in the city to indicate that Loyal is here, and from the excitement we ourselves caused, I think we would have. But if you will tell us where he is, you will be doing him a very great kindness.
The Two Rivers, Brand said. Saving a friend's life was not betraying him. When I last saw him, he was setting out in good company, with friends. It's a quiet place, the Two Rivers. Safe. It was now, again, thanks to Perrin. And he was well a few months ago. Bode had said as much when the girls were telling what had happened back home.
The Two Rivers, Hammond muttered. Yes, I know where that is. Another long walk.
Ogier seldom rode, there being few horses that could bear them, and they preferred their own feet in any case.
We must start out immediately,
Aerith said in a firm, if light, rumble. Light compared to Hammond. Kovril and Hammond looked at her in surprise, and her ears wilted completely. She was, after all, a very young woman, accompanying an elder, and a woman Rand suspected was of some importance in her own right from the way she stood up to Hammond. Aerith was probably not a day over 80. Smiling at the thought, a slip of a girl, maybe only 70. Rand said, "Please accept the hospitality of the palace. A few days' rest might even make your journey faster, and you might be able to help me, Elder Hammond." Of course. Loyal was always talking about his teacher, Elder Hammond. Elder Hammond knew everything, according to Loyal. "I need to locate the way gates. All of them." All three Ogier spoke at once.
"Way gates,"
Hammond said, ears and eyebrows both shooting up.
"The ways are very dangerous, far too dangerous."
"A few days," Aerith protested. "My Loyal could be dying." "A few days," Kovril said on top of her. "My Loyal could be—"
She cut off, staring at the younger woman, lips compressed and ears quivering. Hammond frowned at them both, stroking his narrow beard irritably.
"I do not know why I let myself be talked into this. I should be teaching my classes and speaking to the stump. If you were not such a respected speaker, Kovril—"
"You mean if you were not married to my sister," she said stoutly. "Von Neil told you to do your duty, Hammond."
Hammond's brows lowered till the long ends hung on his cheeks, and her ears seemed to lose most of their stiffness.
"I meant to say she asked you," she went on.
Not hurriedly, exactly, not losing aplomb, but definitely not hesitating.
"By the tree and stillness, I meant no offense, Elder Hammond."
Hammond harumphed loudly, which for an Ogier meant very loudly, and turned to Rand, tugging his coat as if it had been disarrayed. "Shadow spawn are using the ways," Rand said before Hammond could speak. "I have to set guards on the few I can reach, including the one outside Steading Tsofu, plainly after their departure. These three could not have walked all the way from Steading Tsofu after his last futile visit. A bare handful. All of them need to be guarded, or else Murdral and Trollocs can come boiling out of nowhere, as far as anybody they catch is concerned.
but I don't even know where they all are. That would still leave gateways, of course. Sometimes he wondered why one of the Forsaken did not pour a few thousand Trollocs into the palace by a gateway. 10,000 or 20. He would be hard-pressed to stop that, if he could stop it at all. It would be a slaughter at best. Well, he could do nothing about a gateway unless he was there. He could do something about the waygates. Hammond exchanged looks with Kovril. They drew aside, speaking in a whisper, and for a wonder it was low enough that all he heard was a buzz like a huge swarm of bees on the roof. He must be right about her having some importance. A speaker with a capital S. He had heard the capital. He considered seizing Saeddin. He would be able to hear then, and rejected it disgustedly. He had not sunk to eavesdropping yet. Aerith divided her attention evenly between her elders and Rand, all the while unconsciously smoothing her skirts. Rand hoped they did not inquire why he had not asked his question of the Council of Elders instead of Tsofu. Aelar, eldest of the elders there, had been very firm. The stump was meeting, and nothing so odd, so peculiar as to never have been thought of before, as handing control of the waygates to a human could be done unless the stump concurred. Who he was hardly seemed to matter to her any more than it did to these three. Finally, Ammon came back, frowning, and gripping the lapels of his coat. Kovril was frowning, too.
"This is all very hasty, very hasty,"
Ammon said in slow tones like gravel sliding.
"I wish I could discuss it with... well, I cannot. Shallow spawn, you say? Very well. If there must be haste, there must be haste. Never let it be said that Ogier cannot move quickly when needs require, and perhaps they do now. You must understand the Council of Elders in any steading may tell you no, and so may the stump."
"Maps!" Rand shouted, so loudly that all three Ogier jumped. "I need maps!" He spun around, looking for one of the servants who always seemed to be about. For a guy shine, anyone. Sulin put her head into the courtyard through a doorway. She would be nearby, after everything he had told her. "Maps!" he barked at her. "I want every map in the palace. And a pen and ink. Now! Quickly!" She looked at him almost disparagingly. Aiel did not use maps. Indeed, claimed not to need them, and turned away. "Run, Farder Izmai!" he snapped. She looked over her shoulder at him, and ran. He wished he knew how his face looked, so he could recall it for use again. Ammon appeared as though he would be wringing his hands if his dignity had been just a little smaller.
"Really, there is very little we can possibly tell you that you don't already know. Every steading has one just outside."
The first waygates could not have been made inside, with the ability to channel blocked by the steading itself. Even when Ogier were given the Talisman of Growing, and could themselves make the ways grow to a new waygate, the power was still involved, if not channeling.
"And all your cities that have Ogier groves, though it does seem the city here has grown over the grove. And in Al-Kair, Ra'in Alan."
He trailed off, shaking his head. The trouble could be summed up by that name. 3,000 years ago, near enough, there had been a city called Al-Kair, Ra'in Alan, built by Ogier. Today it was Kyrian, and the grove the Ogier builders planted to remind them of their steading was part of an estate that had belonged to the same Barthanas, whose palace now housed Rand's school. Nobody but Ogier and maybe some Aes Sedai remembered Al-Kair, Ra'in Alan. Not even Kyrianin. Whatever Haman believed, much could change in 3,000 years. Great Ogier-built cities had ceased to exist, some leaving not so much as a name behind. Great cities had risen that the Ogier had had no hand in. Amador, begun after the Trolloc Wars, was one, so Moraine had told him, and Chachin in Kandor and Shol Arbella in Arafel, and Falmaran in Shinar. In Arad-Doman, Bandor-Aban had been built on the ruins of a city destroyed in the War of the Hundred Years,
a city Moraine knew three names for, each suspect, and itself built on the ruins of a nameless city that had vanished in the Trolloc Wars. Rand knew of a waygate in Shinar, in the countryside, near a moderate town that had kept part of the name of the huge city leveled by Trollocs, and another inside the Blight, in shadow-murdered Malkir. Other places, there had simply been change or growth, as Hammond himself had pointed out. The waygate here in Camelin sat in a basement now. A well-guarded basement. Rand knew there was a waygate in Tyr, out in the great pasture land, where the Highlords ran their famous horse herds. There should be one somewhere in the Mountains of Mist, where Menethrin had once stood, wherever that was. As far as Stedding went, he knew where to find Stedding Tsofu. Moraine had not considered Stedding or Ogier a vital part of his education.
"You don't know where the Stedding are?"
Hammond said incredulously when Rand finished explaining.
"Is this Aiel humor? I have never understood Aiel humor."
"For Ogier," Rand said gently, "it has been a long time since the ways were made. For humans, it has been a very long time."
"But you do not even remember Mafalda Daranel or Ankohima? Or Undaran Kor, or—"
Kovril put a hand on Hammond's shoulder, but the pity in her eyes was directed at Rand.
"He does not remember,"
she said softly.
"Their memories are gone."
She made it sound the greatest loss imaginable. Aerith, hands clasped to her mouth, appeared ready to cry. Sulin returned, quite deliberately not running, followed by a fat cluster of Gaishine, their arms filled to overflowing with rolled maps of all sizes, some long enough to drag on the courtyard paving stones. One white-robed man carried an ivory-inlaid writing box.
"I have set Gaishine looking for more," she said stiffly, "and some of the wetlanders."
"Thank you," he told her. A little of the tautness went from her face. Squatting down, he began spreading maps right there on the paving stones, sorting them. A number were of the city, and many of parts of Andor. He quickly found one showing the whole stretch of the borderlands, and the light knew what that was doing in Camelin. Some were old and tattered, showing borders that no longer applied, naming countries that had faded away hundreds of years before. Borders and names were enough to rank the maps by age. On the oldest, Hardan bordered Kyrian to the north, then Hardan was gone, and Kyrian's borders swept halfway to Shinar, before creeping back as it became clear the Sun Throne simply could not hold onto that much land. Moredo stood between Tyr and Ilion, then Moredo was gone, and Tyr and Ilion's borders met on the plains of Moredo, slowly falling back for the same reasons as Kyrian's. Carlane vanished, and Almuth, Musara, and Irinvel, and others, sometimes absorbed by other nations, most often eventually becoming unclaimed land and wilderness. Those maps told a story of fading since Hawkwing's empire crumbled, of humanity in slow retreat. A second borderland map showed only Saldaea and part of Arafel, but it showed the Blight border 50 miles farther north, too. Humanity retreated, and the shadow advanced. A bald, skinny man in ill-fitting palace livery scurried into the courtyard with another armload and Rand sighed and went on selecting and discarding. Hammond gravely examined the writing box that was held out to him by the Gaishine, then produced one almost as large, though quite plain, from a capacious coat pocket. The pen he took from it was polished wood, rather fatter than Rand's thumb, and long enough to look slender. It fit the Ogier's sausage-thick fingers perfectly. He got down on hands and knees, crawling among the maps as Rand sorted, occasionally dipping his pen in the Gaishine's inkpot, annotating in a handwriting that seemed too large until you realized that for him it was very small. Kavria followed, peering over his shoulder, even after he asked the second time whether she really thought he would make a mistake. It was an education for Rand, beginning with 7 steadings scattered through the borderlands. But then Trollocs feared to enter a steading, and even Myrdral needed some great purpose to drive them into one. The spine of the world, the Dragon Wall, held 13, including one in Kinslayer's Dagger, from steading Shangtai in the south to steading Kitchen,
and Steading Sunshine in the north, only a few miles apart.
"The land truly changed in the breaking of the world,"
Hammond explained when Rand commented. He continued marking briskly, though, briskly for an Ogier.
"Dry land became sea, and sea dry land, but the land folded as well. Sometimes what was far apart became close together, and what was close, far. Though, of course, no one can say whether Kitchen and Sunshen were far apart at all."
"You forgot Kantuan,"
Kovril announced, making another liveried servant drop his fresh armload of maps with a start. Hammond gave her a look and lettered in the name just above the river Irelel, not far north of Haddon Merk. In the strip west of the Dragon Wall, from the southern border of Shinar to the Sea of Storms, there were only four, all newfound, as the Ogier considered it, meaning the youngest. Sofu had had Ogier back for 6,000 years, and none of the others for more than 1,000. Some of the locations were as big a surprise as the Borderlands, such as the Mountains of Mist, which had 6, and the Shadow Coast. The Black Hills were included, and the forests above the river Ivo, and the mountains above the river Dagon, just north of Arad Daman. Sadder was the list of steading abandoned, given up because the numbers there had grown too few. The Spine of the World and the Mountains of Mist and the Shadow Coast were in that list, too. And so was a steading deep on Almuth Plain, near the great forest called the Parish Swar, and one in the low mountains along the north of Tumun Head, facing the Arath Ocean. Perhaps saddest was the one marked on the very edge of the Blight in Arafel. Murdral might be reluctant to enter a steading, but as the Blight marched south year by year, it swept over everything. Pausing, Hammond said sadly,
"Sharon-Lu was swallowed by the Great Blight 1,843 years ago, and Chandar 968.
May their memories flourish and flower in the light,"
Kovril and Aerith murmured together. "I know of one you didn't mark," Rand said. Perrin had told him of sheltering in it once. He pulled out a map of Andor, east of the river Aranel, and touched a spot well above the road from Camelin to Whitebridge. It was close enough. Hammond grimaced, almost a snarl.
"Where Hawkwing City was to be, that was never reclaimed. Several steading were found and never reclaimed. We try to stay away from the lands of men as much as possible."
All of the marks were in rugged mountains, in places men found hard to enter, or in a few cases, just far from any human habitation. Steading Tsofu lay far closer than any other to where humans dwelled, and even then Rand knew it was a full day to the nearest village.
"This would be a fine discussion another time,"
Kovril said, directing her words to Rand, yet plainly meaning them for Hammond, as her sidelong looks indicated.
"But I want to make as far west as I can before nightfall."
Hammond sighed heavily. "Surely you'll stay here a while," Rand protested. "You must be exhausted, walking all the way from Kyrian."
"Women do not become exhausted," Hammond said. "They only exhaust others. That is a very old saying among us."
Kovril and Aerith sniffed in harmony. Muttering to himself, Hammond went on with his listing, but now it was cities that the Ogier had built. Cities where the groves had been, each grove holding its waygate to carry Ogier back and forth to the steading without passing through the so often troubled lands of men. Camelin he marked, of course, and Tarvalen, Tyr and Ilion, Kyrian and Maradan, and Ebudar. That was the end as far as cities that still existed were concerned. Ebudar, he wrote, was Barashta. Perhaps Barashta belonged with the others in a way, with the dots made in places where the map showed nothing but a village, if that. Mafalda Daranel, and Kohima, and Londaran Kor, of course, and Manetheran. Aran Mador, Aridol, Shemal, Derenbar, Braim, Kondaris, Ayakoramon, Aimon. As that list grew, Rand began to see damp spots on each map,
when Hammond was done. It took him a moment to realize that the Ogier Elder was weeping silently, letting the tears fall as he marked cities dead and forgotten. Perhaps he wept for the people, perhaps for the memories. The one thing Rand could be sure of was that it was not for the cities themselves, not for the lost works of Ogier masons. To the Ogier, stonework was only something they had picked up during the exile, and what work in stone could compare with the majesty of trees? One of those names more than tugged at Rand's memories, and its location as well, east of Berlon, several days above Whitebridge on the Arunel. "There was a grove here," he said, fingering the mark.
"At Arid Hall?"
Hammond said.
"Yes. Yes, there was. A sad business, that."
Rand did not raise his head. "In Shadar Logoth," he corrected. "A very sad business. Could you... would you show me that way gate if I took you there?" Chapter 21. To Shadar Logoth.
"Take us there?"
Coveril said, frowning formidably at the map in Rand's hands.
"It will carry us well out of our way, if I remember where the Two Rivers is correctly. I will not waste another day finding Loyal."
Aerith nodded firmly. Hammond, cheeks still damp with tears, shook his head for their haste, but said,
"I cannot allow it. Arid Hall, Shadar Logoth, as you rightly name it now, is no place for someone as young as Aerith. In good truth, it is no place for anyone."
Letting the map fall, Rand stood up. He knew Shadar Logoth better than he wanted to. "You will lose no time. In fact, you'll gain. I will take you there by traveling, by a gateway. You will be most of the way to the Two Rivers today. We'll not be long. I know you can lead me right to the Waygate." Ogier could sense Waygates, if they were not too far. This necessitated another conference beyond the fountain, one Aerith demanded to be part of. Rand caught only snatches, yet it was plain that Hammond, shaking his great head doggedly, opposed the plan, while Coveril, ears so stiff it seemed she was trying for every inch of height, insisted on it. At first Coveril frowned at Aerith as much as at Hammond. Whatever the relationship between mother-in-law and daughter-in-law among Ogier, she clearly thought the younger woman had no business in this. It did not take her long to change her mind, though. The Ogier women flanked Hammond, hammering at him relentlessly.
"Too dangerous, much too dangerous,"
came like distant thunder from Hammond.
"Almost there today."
A slighter thunder from Coveril.
"He has been outside too long already."
An almost silvery peal from Aerith.
"Haste makes for waste. My Loyal, my Loyal. Mashadar beneath our feet. My Loyal, my Loyal. As an elder, my Loyal, my Loyal."
Hammond came back to Rand, tugging at his coat as though it had been ripped half off, followed by the women. Coveril maintained a smoother face than Aerith, who fought to suppress a smile, but their tufted ears were at the same jaunty angle, somehow conveying satisfaction.
"We have decided," Hammond said stiffly, "to accept your offer. Let this ridiculous gallivanting be done with, so I can return to my classes and to the stump. There is much to be said about you before the stump."
Rand did not care whether Hammond told the stump he was a bully. Ogier held themselves apart from men except for repairing their old stonework, and it was unlikely they would influence any human one way or another about him. "Good," he said. "I will send someone to fetch your belongings from your inn."
"We have everything right here."
Coveril went back around to the other side of the fountain, bent and straightened with two bundles that had been hidden behind the basin. Either would have made a heavy load for a man. She handed one to Aerith and slipped a strap tied to the other over her head so it slanted across her chest, holding the bundle against her back.
"If Loyal were here,"
Aerith explained, donning her bundle,
"we would be ready to start back to Steading Tsofu without delay. If not, we would be ready to go on without delay.
Actually, it was the beds,
Ammon confided, holding his hands to indicate a size to fit a human child.
Once every inn outside had two or three Ogier rooms, but they seem very hard to find now. It is difficult to understand.
He glanced at the marked maps and sighed.
It was difficult to understand.
Waiting just long enough for Hammond to fetch his own bundle, Rand seized Cyadine and opened a gateway right there beside the fountain. A hole in the air that showed a ruined, weed-filled street and collapsing buildings.
Randall Thor!
Sulin almost strolled into the courtyard, just ahead of a cluster of map-laden servants and Guy Shine. Lya and Cassin were with her, pretending to be just as casual.
You asked for more maps?
Sulin's glance at the gateway was barely short of accusing. I can protect myself better there than you can, Rand told her coldly. He did not intend it to be cold, but wrapped in the void, he could not make his voice anything but cold and distant. There is nothing your spears can fight, and some things they can't. Sulin still wore a good deal of her earlier stiffness.
All the more reason for us to be there.
That could not possibly make sense to anyone, not Aiel, but... I will not argue it, he said. She would try to follow if he refused. She would summon maidens who would try to leap through, even if he was closing the gateway. I expect you have the rest of today's guard just inside. Whistle them up. But everyone is to stay close to me and touch nothing. Be quick about it. I want this done with. His memories of Shadar Logoth were not pleasant.
I sent them away as you insisted, Sulin said disgustedly. Give me a slow count of 100. 10. 50.
Rand nodded, and her fingers flashed. Jelani darted away inside, and Sulin's hands flickered again. Three Guy Shine women dropped their armloads of maps, looking startled. Aiel never looked that surprised. Gathered long white robes and vanished back into the palace in different directions. But quickly as they moved, Sulin was ahead of them. As Rand reached 20, Aiel began bounding into the courtyard, hurtling through windows, leaping down from balconies. He almost lost the count. Everyone was veiled, and only some maidens. They stared about in confusion when they found only Rand and three Ogier, blinked at them curiously. Some lowered their veils. The palace servants huddled together. The flow continued even after Sulin returned, unveiled, dead on the count of 50, the courtyard filling with Aiel. Quickly it became clear that she had spread the word the Kaa Karn was in danger, the only way she felt she could gather enough spears in the time allotted. A little sour grumping passed among the men, but most decided it was a fine joke, some chuckling or rattling spears on bucklers. None left, though. They looked at the gateway and settled on their haunches to see what was happening. Ears sharpened with the power, Rand heard a maiden named Nandera, sinewy yet still handsome despite more gray than yellow in her hair, whisper to Sulin,
You spoke to Guy Shine as Fardarai's Mai.
Sulin's blue eyes met Nandera's green levelly.
I did. We will deal with it when Randall Thor is safe today.
When he is safe, Nandera agreed.
Sulin chose out 20 maidens quickly, some who had been part of the guard that morning and some not. But when Urien began picking red shields, men from other societies insisted they should be included. That city through the gateway looked a place where enemies might be found, and the Kaa Karn must be protected. If the truth be told, no Aiel turned away from a possible fight, and the younger they were, the more likely to try to find one. Another argument almost started when Rand said the men could not number more than the maidens. That would dishonor Fardarai's Mai, since he had given them his honor to carry, and the maidens not more than Sulin had already chosen. He truly was taking them where no battle skills could protect them, and everyone who came with him was one more he would have to watch out for. That he did not explain. No telling whose honor he would step on if he did. Remember, he said once they were sorted out, touch nothing. Take nothing, not even a sip of water. And stay in sight always. Don't go inside any building for any reason. Ammon and Kovril nodded vigorously, which seemed to impress the Aiel more than Rand's words. So long as they were impressed. They stepped through the gateway into a city long dead. A city more than dead. A golden sun, more than halfway to its zenith, roasted the ruins of greatness. Here and there a huge intact dome topped a pale marble palace, but more were whole than not, and most often only a curved and broken fragment remained. Long columned walks ran to towers as tall as anything Carrion had ever dreamed of, and to towers ending jaggedly. Everywhere roofs had fallen in, bricks and stone fanned across fractured paving stones from collapsed buildings and walls. Shattered fountains and broken monuments decorated every intersection. Stunted trees, dying in the drought, dotted great hills of rubble. Dead weeds lined cracks in streets and buildings. Nothing moved, not a bird, not a rat, not a breeze. Silence shrouded Shadaloghoth. Shadaloghoth, where the shadow waits. Rand let the gateway vanish. No Aiel unveiled. The Ogier stared around, faces tight and ears laid stiffly back. Rand held on to Saeedine in that fight that Taim said told a man he was alive. Even if he had not been able to channel, maybe especially then, he would have wanted that reminder here. Aredhul had been a great capital in the days of the Trolloc Wars, an ally of Manethrin and the rest of the Ten Nations. When those wars had lasted long enough to dwarf the War of the Hundred Years, when it seemed the Shadow was everywhere victorious, and every victory of the Light did no more than buy time, a man named Mordith became a counselor in Aredhul, and counseled the rule that to win, to survive, Aredhul must be harder than the Shadow, more cruel than the Shadow, less trusting. Slowly they made it so, until in the end, Aredhul became, if not blacker than the Shadow, as black. With war still raging against the Trollocs, Aredhul finally turned in on itself. Turned on itself, consumed itself. Something was left behind, something that had kept anyone from ever living here again. Not a pebble of this place, but was tainted with the hatred and suspicion that had murdered Aredhul and left Shadaloghoth. Not a pebble but could infect with time. And more than the taint remained, though that was enough to keep any sane man away. Rand turned slowly where he stood, staring up at windows like empty eye sockets, the eyes gouged out. With the sun climbing high, he could feel unseen watchers. When he had been here before, that feeling had not come through this strongly until the sun began to go down. Much more than the taint remained. A Trolloc army had died camping here, vanished, except for messages smeared on walls in blood, begging the Dark One to save them. Night was no time to be in Shadaloghoth.
"This place frightens me," Luz Theron murmured beyond the void. "Does it not frighten you?"
Rand's breath caught. Was the voice actually addressing him?
"Yes, it frightens me. There is darkness here. Blackness, blacker than black. If the Dark One chose to live among men, he would choose here."
"Yes, he would."
"I must kill Demondred."
Rand blinked.
"Does Demondred have some connection to Shadaloghoth? To here?"
"I remember at last killing Ishmael."
There was a sense of wonder in the voice, at a new discovery.
"He deserved to die. Lanfear deserved to die too, but I am glad I was not the one to kill her."
Was it just happenstance that the voice seemed to speak to him? Was Luz Theron hearing, answering?
Did you kill Ishmael? Tell me how."
"Death. I want the rest of death. But not here. I do not want to die here."
Rand sighed. Just happenstance. He would not want to die here either. A nearby palace, broken columns along its front, had a distinct lean toward the street. It could fall any time and bury them where they stood. "Lead on," he told Hammond. To the Aiel he added, "Remember what I said. Touch nothing, take nothing, and stay in sight."
"I did not think it would be so bad," Hammond muttered. "It almost washes away the waygate."
Aerith moaned, and Coveril looked as though she would if she were not too dignified. Ogier were sensitive to the mood of a place. Hammond pointed. The sweat on his face had nothing to do with the heat.
"That way."
Broken pavement crunched beneath Rand's boots like bones grinding. Hammond directed them around corners and down.